Thanks very much, Ben. Is everybody okay with me sitting down? I mean, is that all right? Good. So we start as informally as I hope we'll go on. Well, goodness, Ben, the honour is all mine, really. I was extremely flattered and touched to be asked to have any role at all in this meeting, and I'm thrilled to be here. I've been visiting some schools, not enough. I'm going to be doing some more visits. And the one thing, actually, when I agreed simply to do something to be able to help, supposing the national curriculum needed revising at all, was to listen. I've been doing that with enormous amount of respect and pleasure and admiration. It's very kind, Ben, you say that, you know, eminent, as we would say at home, eminent, schmeminent, but essentially, I find it very odd, actually, weirdly, that what the Historical Association stands for, and I too want to give an incredible vote of thanks to the HA, not just for this particular occasion, but for the polls of opinion, the reports that have come out both on secondary and primary school education year after year, which are incredibly valuable for us, those who are thinking about teaching. But what I was going to say is I find it very odd that this idea of the history community is not paid more attention to by those of us teaching at universities, because I all of us who've actually gone to places other than school teaching began with great history teachers. I did. Only one of them, really, was a history teacher who nearly put me off the subject for life. He had an extraordinary kind of syncopated rhythm by which he would make us memorize, particularly Anglo-Saxon data, while aiming a very heavy metal ferrule at our childish hands on the desk. So it would sort of be basically go, Hengist and Horsa, child, like that. Ethelred the Unready, and so on. I graduated past him. Sorry about that. And I had really spectacularly wonderful teachers. And I've rediscovered, of course, actually, exactly as Ben said, the exceptional quality of history teaching in schools, not just this past year, but, you know, from all my dealings. I've gone in and taught classes in schools in the United States. I've been living there for a long time. And have had the same sort of exhilarating experience. And one thing I just want to say is that, again, exactly as Ben says, a lot of the sort of simplicities, really, about what kind of crisis we may have, or indeed if we do have one at all, something I'm sure will be on your minds to address, has been based on an absurdly oversimplified set of polarizations between narrative history and analytical question-answering history. If you think about the very beginning of history with Herodotus, for example, he uses in his first sentence the word historia in Greek, meaning an inquiry. So absolutely from the first, as it were, kiss wakening history to life in the European tradition, history was meant to do both these things, to tell a story and to ask a question. So that seemed to be one sort of simplicity. And there are many others as well. And so the issue actually of whether or not the national curriculum as a set of institutions is militating or against actually a broad dot-connected view of history, or whether it's actually the kind of raw, rather prosaic problems which I know and I've heard from many of you are, you know, experiencing, shortage of classroom time being one of them, the pressures of constantly having to worry about league table driven performances and so on. That seems all those nuances really quite rightly make more sophisticated the notion of, do we have a crisis, and if so, what crisis it is. So setting aside this issue, really, these simplicities, and whether or not there is all I've experienced really is so much passion and energy and sophistication and attentiveness, really, in the classroom. This, for me, and for all of us, I hope, is really a sounding board, really, for the constant work in progress that it is the way you all teach history in school. It's not a crisis, but it seems to me that, and I cringe slightly before even articulating things like British identity or national culture or citizenship, but it is a fact, for sure, that really from its very beginnings in the 16th century, English history in particular, and it was a kind of English invention due to the Reformation, was always came with ideological and polemical baggage, whether it's Sir Thomas More writing his particular kind of apologia for the Tudors and his particular demonology of Richard III, or people like Hall's history or Raphael Holinshed's history. It was never exactly liberated from external political pressures of ideology. And I think we probably all accept this. Doesn't mean to say that we should be driven to a more polemically coloured view of what it is we do when we engage with historical pedagogy. On the contrary, it seems to me that we can relax. I'm sure my friend David Cannadine's researches have, in the same way that they've suggested there was no golden age, there was probably no age in which there wasn't a lot of agonizing about the fate of the nation or the empire reflected in history texts and history methods to teach. But we are obviously at a stage in our shared national life when we're a very different kind of culture than we were, say, in the 1950s or even possibly in the 1960s. And that boils down, I think, to questions, for example, particularly in primary schools, I think, where a 9-year-old from a South Asian background might want to, through history, answer the question without it being reductivist in any way: what am I doing here in Huddersfield or Bradford or Manchester or East London? And for that matter, then, you know, what were, you know, pinko grey men, us and women, as E.M. Forster called us, doing in India in the first place? It seems to me that those sorts of stories and questions together that do address where we have arrived, the point at which we arrived, aren't irrelevant. They aren't just a matter of crude political correctness. The wiring which attaches to family, personal, cultural experience, to the larger issues of what a shared memory or shared narrative can be, seem to me important ones. They're not a crisis, but they are, does seem to me, something very worthwhile addressing. And it may be that we all feel that the curriculum and its possibilities have done a better job in, say, thinking about slavery and its abolition and the history of slavery in the empire and the fate of non-white cultures inside Britain than we have, for example, with Asian history. It may be or may not be something that we want to address. That's more than enough from me. It's my pleasure to introduce the panel who are going to respond to your questions. And beginning with Dr. Michael Riley on my left, who's director of the school's history project. You all know the project, I hope. It's a wonderful enterprise and pours out extraordinarily interesting food for thought in all the issues that we're going to consider this evening. Michael says, because it's true, that he says he's a history teacher at Huish Episcopi Academy in Somerset, but he told me he'd just gone back to teaching. And I said, how is that? And he said, how was the re-entry? Should I tell them what you said?
Probably. Indeed, yeah.
Slightly painful, he said, actually. Not meaning to diss any of you. He's also taught and was telling me wonderful stories about what it was like to teach in Tanzania. So if you've taught in both Tanzania and Somerset, you have an almost unbeatable background to be thinking about what can and can't be done with history. Simon Harrison on my left is deputy head teacher at a comprehensive school in Hampshire. Where's that, Simon?
Swarthmore, near Winchester.
Near Winchester. And chair of the HA Secondary Committee. Alison, who's on my right, has been teaching since 1993. How did you end up teaching history in Budapest?
Just after the fall of communism, they had some dual language schools.
Fantastic.
Because people had learnt only Russian, they were trying to learn English and learn all the subjects through the
How long were you there?
Just a year.
Oh, right, it's amazing. I only know two sets of phrases in Hungarian, one of which is obscene. So I'm not, yeah. Alison's been teaching history for in and out of Hungary for 17 years. And oh no, I'm sorry. No, I beg your pardon. No, I'm looking at it wrong. But you've taught in Manchester, and you're now head of history at Abraham Moss High School, Manchester. Forgive me. Reading the wrong paragraph. Claire, well, there you are. Claire is a teacher in a large comprehensive school. Remind me where, Claire?
Harris Academy, South Norwood.
In South Norwood, yeah. Okay. And Claire is an articulate and passionate voice on these issues that I've heard before. Barbara is, is any one of you in representing the great estate of primary school teaching, actually, but it's you. But the power of your presence will make up for the fact you're a minority on this panel. Former head of a pre-prep in Gloucestershire. And it says you're teaching in both the state and independent sectors, actually.
Yes.
So it'd be incredibly interesting to hear from you about that, the whole issue of the relationship between primary school teaching and secondary school teaching is something that I hope will arrive on our agenda. So without more ado, it's incredibly, it's great fun being playing the fake Dimbleby role, really, but without the classy ties that David has.